Hey, everybody. Welcome to the UprisingReviewed.com podcast. I am Everett. I am here with Steven. Well, one of us has been drinking, and the other one hasn't, because he's only been awake for an hour, because that's how they do it in Arizona. But yeah, we are recording another podcast. After doing podcasts until like 5 a.m. last night, we are recording a podcast this afternoon as well, because we want to get more content out to you. We want to get more fun out to you. We want to get more joy out to you. And frankly, we want to get more of you writing good stories. So that is where we're at. Today's topic is going to be something that Steven and I have been talking about, and we're excited about. And it is characters. And because pretty much every story you will ever write, unless you write some 200-word flash fiction thing, which is like emotional or something, you're going to need characters. You're going to have characters in your story. So we thought, let's talk about what a character is, what makes for a good character, what makes for a bad character, what makes for a forgettable character. What makes a character something that the reader will want to come back to the author for? Because that kind of ties into the marketing that we have been talking about recently. There's a lot to talk about here today. But yeah, Steven, do you want to kick us off, or do you want me to kind of talk about character a little first? It's up to you.
I can kind of kick it off a little bit. So
okay, so let me just ask the basic question.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you're going to write your novel, what the fuck is a character?
Gosh, how do you even answer that question?
Well, I have an answer because I sat down and thought about it for a long time, a couple of years ago. But, yeah, I mean, like, I was just asking you, like, you know, what exactly is a character? I mean, if we talk about a friend, if we talk about our friend from school, our friend is a person who has a body and a face and a name. And how do we... And many people try to take their real-life friends and their real-life acquaintances and translate it into characters in their novels. So, it doesn't always work, but, you know, so that kind of brings us to the question of what's the difference between a real person and a character, and what exactly is a character?
Well, I mean, I guess when it's done right, you really can kind of portray a real person. That's obviously the goal, to make your characters authentic and come across to the reader as very plausible and real, even if they're, even if you're writing a science fiction or some character that doesn't...
Something that's not human. I mean, if you're writing bug men, you know, turcroaches or something.
Yeah, things like that can still have characters. And, you know, I think a really good example, actually, we like to bring this book up a lot for some reason, but I think a great example of a book that has a really believable and realistic character, but isn't necessarily something or someone that we all know or have direct experience with in our everyday life, and that is Humbert from Lolita.
Yeah, absolutely.
He comes across as a very real character, and you understand that character within that book, even though you don't,
most of us don't associate with it.
Right. You don't necessarily understand.
Well, like Humbert, though, is, we kick around the word Mary Sue a lot in writing circles, but, you know, Humbert is, in no uncertain terms, a Mary Sue for Nabokov, because Nabokov was an academic. Humbert was an academic. He's European. Humbert is European. Like, if we remember the first chapter, that kind of very short first chapter of Lolita, you know, it's Lolita, Lolita, the tip of the, you know, whatever. I don't remember off the top of my head. I had it memorized, but I can't remember. But it's a brilliant introduction. But he basically says, you know, Lolita is the light of my life, my sin, my soul, Lolita. And he kind of concludes, though, not so much with a erotic look at Lolita, but rather a look at Lolita as the catalyst to a murder, which is actually what the book is about, really, in some ways. But there are parts where Humbert is saying, you know, she was low, plain low standing, you know, 4'10" in one sock. She was Lola in slacks, Dolores in pants, and Dolores at school, and Dolly on the dotted eye, or whatever. I don't remember off the top of my head, but, you know, he uses Nabokov uses perspective of Humbert Humbert to create a very full character, and a character that many of us, I think, can not relate to, but we've seen him. You know, especially if you've been to college, you've kind of seen that skeezy college professor who, you know, wants to make his undergrad sing "I'm a Little Teacup" or something.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. I think we all, I mean, he just writes it in a way that you do understand it as a character. I mean, I think a lot of ways he is very relatable.
Well, he's weak in a lot of ways. He's a very much a beta male who preys on a young girl who can't really say no. Right, he's not going for a woman who has the opportunity to evaluate him as a potential mate. He's going for a girl who has absolutely no experience in the male realm, and you know that's something that you see sometimes today from guys who are like, "Oh well, you know, I want a virgin QT. I don't want some thought who's been around." And part of that is, like, I get the sentiment, like, you're a traditional guy. You want a girl who doesn't cheat or sleep around or anything, but if you're over the age of 21, you're pretty much gonna have to settle for a woman who has known the touch of a man, and that's kind of where we are today. But Humbert Humbert is different. He is a man who, for reasons very complex, obsesses over girls who have never known manhood or other men. He's a very full character in that way, isn't he?
Yeah. And one of the things that I realize is really important when writing characters is allowing them to really grow throughout the story, not just in response to...
Do you mean character arc in that sense that we've talked about before? Like, you know, they start at point A and they end at point C, and the story is getting from A to C through B. Is that what you mean by growing?
Sort of, but not more, I guess, in an emotional setting. You know, and I guess every story is different. Think about an example that I wrote. You know, I had this character that had gone through a traumatic experience, and through the story... The story was kind of her response to that experience and how she dealt with that and what she did as a result of that. And through her actions, it really showed how she had the change that had happened as a result of that throughout the story. And it wasn't like a light switch. It was very gradual.
Okay. Like a dimmer more than a light switch.
Yeah.
You know, I've been thinking all day about this pretty much since I woke up, and to me, character is that thing that defines the novel more than anything else, probably more than conflict, certainly more than setting, certainly more than theme. Character is what drives the novel. It's what creates the plot. It's what you as a writer are obliged to do, because if you do a character well, people will relate to it, and people will come back to your work. It's just that simple. And so I've been thinking about whether or not I should kind of share this little tidbit of my life with people. And I think probably I will, just because I want people to understand where I'm coming from whenever I say that to me the essence of a character is dignity, basic human dignity. And I will say, so let me kind of rant here for a second, or at least explain for a second. Back in 2009, I got into a relationship with a girl who was a English major, a PhD English student, at a private university in the South. I'm not going to give away too much, but she was there. And I sent her, because I used to want to be a screenwriter, I sent her a screenplay of mine called The Wingman. And like a couple of months after we broke up, she got in contact with me again, saying she had read this script. And her exact quote was, "I'm not a feminist, but this is really offensive." And so I kind of thought about it, and I put a lot of effort into it, and I reread my screenplay, and I kind of thought, you know, so what exactly am I saying here? Because this screenplay was about kind of the pickup artist culture, and about, you know, men who have kind of given up on dating and instead just prefer to pursue sex. And I thought to myself, you know, if I were to ever option this, or if I were to ever option a story like this, I'd feel really bad for the actress playing any of these female characters, because these are characters that lacked dignity. They lacked, you know, it wasn't that they lacked depth or anything like that. I mean, I'm sure they did. But they, as characters, lacked dignity. And the actresses who would have to play them would have to embody a character that has no real soul, that has no real dignity. And that's something that's always bothered me. And it's something that I think I have kind of exercised in books like Autumn Leaves and The Stormfishers, is because I create characters, also women characters, that have dignity to them. And that, to me, is the most defining characteristic of a realistic character, is does your character have dignity or not? And to me, it's just an ethos thing. I want my characters, whether they're good, bad, evil, chaotic, neutral, whatever, I want them to have a kind of dignity to them. I want them to want to be better people. I want them to embody good values, or at least to want to embody good values, I should say. And that, to me, is something that I'm really proud of as a writer, because people tell me whenever they read Autumn Leaves, they say, oh, I can't believe you write women so well. How do you write women so well? And, you know, I don't have any sisters. I have, like, a mom and a grandma, or I did have a grandma. She passed away. But, you know, they say things to me like that, and that makes me really proud, and it makes me feel like I've come a long way from where I was writing, you know, female characters that basically existed to, you know, define the male character as cool and as a player. And that, is, I think, is the first step that every writer needs to take. You need to take that ethical step. You need to say, what do my characters stand for? Who are my characters? Do my characters have a real human value? And even if you're never planning on turning it into a movie, even if it's always going to be a script, I would advocate for any writer out there, give your characters dignity. Give your characters value as creatures, as, you know, the living image of God, as, you know, if you're religious, let them be people. And in my way, don't create a character that you would be ashamed of owning, or that you would be ashamed of telling an actress, here, go play this character, you know? Here, strip some of your basic humanity as a person and go play this character. So that to me is really my starting point whenever I create a character, whether it's in historical fiction or science fiction or whatever. Dignity is, to me, the essence of a character.
Yeah, you know, I think it's really important, you know, for writers to realize, and just general people to realize, especially today, that everyone has their truth. And we all see things differently, but everyone has that thing that they, or the truths that they hold on to and they believe. And even, you know, a character that is absolutely evil is still going to have that truth. Even Humbert Humbert, who was insane, still did have that dignity, his own truth. And that's really important to creating a character that is authentic. I think another important step to that is to realize that we all think about things differently. And something I've started to do is really started to look at, you know, what's this character's personality like? How do they think about things? What are their goals? What do they want out of life? And how do they go about doing that, that's different than, you know, this character or, you know, this person?
Yeah, so you said a lot there. Let's unpack a little bit about this. You mentioned personality, and I've run across many blogs and even writers who say that they study psychology so that they can understand the personality of a character and create a more real character. I wonder, though, how much psychology do you really need to study to create a good character? And do you need to have every character have a kind of a psychological flaw? Do they all need to have a kind of psychological breakdown? Do they need to be narcissists and you know, bipolar and whatever? To me, that seems like you're just creating a kind of a soup of mental illness rather than characters that are capable of acting on their own volition.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's definitely a pit to fall in there. Yeah, I think if you get way too into the psychology of it, or you're dedicated to studying psychology to understand characters, I think you're doing something wrong. Because I know we've had this conversation, like we both hate psychology.
Yes.
I hate it because I actually have a pretty good understanding of the way people work. And so when I see psychology, it just seems really, really shallow and unauthentic to me. However, there are, what I do like, you know, if there's a main character that I really want to nail down kind of the way they think or how they go about doing something, the 16 personality types are actually something that are, when presented well, because they're not always presented well, when the 16 personality types are presented well, I think they're very effective at getting you to understand.
Even the Briggs-Myers, right?
Yeah, the Briggs-Myers. I've read some.
Do you know what your Briggs-Myers type is off the top of your head?
ENTJ, or excuse me, INTJ.
Mine, I don't remember the exact initials, but mine is like, you know, the debater or the polemicist or something like that. It's extrovert something something, you know, the guy who likes to take the opposite opinion, you know, the contrarian, I guess, is what mine is.
ENTP.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I pulled it up.
Okay, well, good.
No, I was actually about to say, like, I've seen them presented in a way that's a little too narrow. A lot of the Briggs-Myers results will say, oh, like, this type of person likes to go in this type of job. And I just think that's way too specific. But the website 16personalities.com really goes into depth and really breaks it down really well. And so if you want to look at psychology, that's what I would recommend looking at. And that's definitely what I recommend, or I personally look at for, you know, trying to figure out how a character thinks. But I would almost caution you, don't do it too soon. Think about it. Think about your character. As writers, we often look at people and look at situations much better than the average person.
Yeah, one of the things that I've noticed about personalities is, like, when I was a teenager, I read a lot of Carl Jung, and I read his collected stories, and I read two things that really influenced me. One was the, I think it was called The Anima, and one was called The Animus, and I think that's just what the books were called. Essentially, the female personality and the male personality, and that really influenced me. And I realized that in the current year, it's très gauche to talk about men and women having different kinds of personalities, in the same way it's, you know, that there can be women with penises and men with wombs or whatever. But, you know, that to me really influenced my psychological development as a person who looks at characters, as a person who looks at things in books, as a person who looks at things in art, and as well in life, and attempts to understand them in that way. Because, you know, Jung played a big role in my psychological learning. Even though I didn't study psychology at college or in any formal way, I've read a lot of psychology, and Jung is something that, to me, is very accurate. I especially love his concepts like the collective unconscious and how it kind of forms, I guess you could say, a kind of an ethnic soul or a national soul. You know, there's a certain Russian personality type, a British personality type, an Italian personality type, et cetera, et cetera. That is, to me, a very influential part of my development as a writer and as just a person who thinks about other people.
And that's another whole aspect we could get into about characters, because it's, when I think a lot of times we do end up writing our own nationalities, but when we do branch out, and unless you're ever, who writes about Japan.
That's true. I'm writing about Northern Italy this time, though. Yeah, and I'm neither Italian nor Japanese. So one of these days I'm writing a story about Slavic people. So yeah, I will do that.
But no, anyway, that's a really important thing to bring up. You know, having, you know, figuring out your character's nationality. And even if you are writing, you know, if you're an American writing an American character, still figure out where that character came from. I mean,
yeah, they're different versions of Americans. I mean, a New Yorker and a Californian and a Texan are quite different.
Yeah, and so, I mean, if your character is from Ohio and lived out in the country, it's going to be a much different character than somebody who lived in New York City. So even more minute changes like that can really change a character's perspective.
There's something I wanted to bring up. There's something that I always talk about whenever I talk about characterization, and that is my answer to the question, what is a character? So, you know, that is a very fundamental question that I think anyone should ask even before they start writing novels, even, you know, maybe at the very beginning of your journey into becoming a writer, is what is a character, right? And to me, a character, and the difference between a character and a real person is that a character, you give it a name, and that name is a shorthand for a collection of values, because your characters are all ultimately, you know, your character will have a name like Humbert Humbert, but he has a collection of values. And when you say in your novel, Humbert, or when you say in your novel, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head because I'm not looking at a particular novel right now. When you name your novel, when you say Aragorn, Aragorn has a particular collection of values. Or when you say, Spider-Man, he has a particular collection of values. But the name of that character is a shorthand for those values. So, in my opinion, a character is a collection of values. And if you really want to create a cool character, a great character, or a memorable character, let some of those values conflict. Because in the real world, we don't always have consistent values. We're not necessarily these sort of super libertarian people who, evaluate everything by the non-aggression principle, right? We oftentimes look at things and say, okay, well, I believe in this, but I don't believe in that. I agree with this, but I don't agree with that. And it's kind of like, even if you were to say that your character is a Christian, what exactly does that mean? There are 40,000 Christian denominations in the United States. They all have different kind of interpretations of the word. So let your character embody values that sometimes contradict it. And remember that that name you gave your character is really just a shorthand for those values. And that, to me, is the starting point of a character. It is, and it's the a way that I understand character from Aristotle. We talked about this in, I think, the last podcast, maybe the one before that, that character is fate, right? So your character is your values that you hold, and if you hold a certain set of values, they will lead you to certain choices, and those certain choices will lead you to a certain terminus, and that terminus is the end of your book, the end of your novel, the way everything turns out. So, yeah, a character to me is just a collection of values.
Every great character definitely has those values, and like I was saying earlier, even if it's a very evil, a character we would look at in everyday life and see a lack of values, it's just the values that are theirs, that they, everyone's got their own values.
Yeah, that's actually that brings up something kind of interesting to my slightly inebriated brain here. And that is, if you don't recognize the values of another person, or you don't recognize the values of another character, maybe that is because you are not looking at the character through those appropriate eyes. So, I'll say from my history degree, whenever I was a master's student writing about the Vietnam War, I realized that Creighton Abrams was quite different than William Westmoreland. They're both basically high-ranking military officials who were in charge of the Vietnam War at one point, but their values are very different. And I wonder if you wrote a novel or a book about Creighton Abrams, would the people who associate with him also understand William Westmoreland, who wanted a kind of a Vietnamization of the war, the turning over of the war to the Vietnamese people? That was that choice was the result of a different set of values than Creighton Abrams had.
Yeah, you know, I think today, by and large, many of us fail to recognize, you know, when we're arguing a political point or something like that, for some reason, we're not making the connection that it's just we're arguing with someone else's set of values. I mean, it all has to deal with their worldview and their truth. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe, you know, we recorded a really good podcast on conflict. And if you guys haven't listened to our podcast on conflict, I assume it's out before this one. I don't know when this one's coming out. But conflict is a really good podcast that I think we did. And I think one of the things that we talked about was how I believed that difference, diversity, whatever word you want to use, difference plus proximity equals conflict. And I think that that's something that you can extrapolate to character. Because if your characters have different values, they will necessarily be thrown into conflict with each other.
Absolutely. And I mean, we see that today. And for whatever reason, just it really blows my mind, I guess, is why I just say we just don't make the connection that we're arguing with someone because they just think differently, and that's okay. But that's certainly something that makes characters more complex, and like we're saying, adds to conflict.
Yeah, and you know what we're talking about here. We talked about I think yesterday, books that influenced us, and I mentioned The Hero with a Thousand Faces as a coming of age story. And one of the things that makes a coming of age story different than every other story is the coming of age story is a character not dealing necessarily with values, but dealing with psychological conflict, with, you know, what it means to be a man, what it means to be a Jedi, what it means to be whatever. But pretty much every other book you're going to read or every movie you're going to see is going to deal with values and those values as embodied by characters. Right. And so I really think any writer, and maybe this is something that I need to work on too, I think any writer really needs to look at those values and say, how do these values conflict? How do these values conflict with people around me? And how do they conflict within myself? Because, you know, if you just look at the modern world, you know, most people, they kind of hold contradictory values, right? Like, you know, I'm not even talking political values or religious values. I'm just talking, you know, some people would say they believe in, for example, they'll say they believe in hard work. But then they turn around and don't really work that hard themselves, sit on the couch, watch Dancing with the Stars, and wonder why they're unsuccessful. So that's a kind of a values conflict that we could see in the modern world. And that values conflict, as I said before, from Plato or from Aristotle is, you know, character is fate. Well, if your character is one that sits around watching Dancing with the Stars instead of working on your business all night, you know, you're going to have a fairly unsuccessful business. I realize that's probably not the best way to describe a character for a novel, but, you know, that's something that people need to kind of look at and think about.
No, I think that actually is a really good example because it's very current to today. You know, we're constantly distracted by the things around us. Yet, these same things make us want to be successful so that we can buy, you know, more things that distract us.
It's the essence of materialism and consumerism, yeah. Right? It's, you know, your goal in life is to get a college degree so you can go to work so you can buy stuff. You know, really, is the human life in the 21st century really that much different than that? And I would say that the human life, the heroic life, the life that we have led for thousands of years as Europeans and I guess as other people too, our life is about more than just buying and sitting and eating and watching the television and then dying. You know, I don't want to go through my life, you know, working so that I can pay bills so that I can eventually die. That to me is not the essence of life. That to me is really the antithesis of life. It is slavery in no uncertain terms. You know, it might not be physically picking cotton, but, you know, if you're a slave to a bank so you can pay off your mortgage, if you're a slave to a bank so you can pay off your student loans, if you are a slave to your credit card company so that you can pay off, you know, that somewhat expensive dinner that you ate at the chain restaurant that cost $75 for whatever, you know, some mediocre steak, you know, that is not life. And those are not the values that I want to live. But many people today do live those values, or they will say that they have other higher values, but whenever they actually have to make choices, they live the materialist life. And that, I think, is a conflict, really, of the 21st century, you know, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And I think that's something that we can all understand, even if, you know, we're taking this similar conflict and putting it into a character that is not in this time or whatever. I think that's something that we can all understand, and a challenge like that that a character has to overcome.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things I like about writing historical fantasy is I get to explore values of centuries that are not my own. Maybe the values of a century that I should have been born into, because there are times when I think, you know, I really don't belong in the 21st century. I really belong in like the 14th century. You know, it's just, that's my time period. You know, and even though we have a lot of really luxurious things today and, you know, dentistry is nice, I think I probably would have been happier in, you know, 1490 Venice than I would be in 2017 Texas, because it's just, it, you know, the values are different. The way we live life is different. You know, one of the values I've been dealing with in this new novel that I'm writing, that I've mentioned several times now, is the concept of honor. And honor is just something that doesn't really exist in the 21st century anymore. You know, we kind of talk about honor in terms of, you know, you disrespected me, or you talked shit about my girlfriend, or something like that. But they viewed honor in a little different way. For them, honor was still this kind of a pagan virtue that they inherited from the Romans. And it was a virtue that you took with you through the grave and, you know, into heaven or into your next life, whatever you believed. But that's something we really don't have today. Today, when we say honor, most people would think of like an Islamic honor killing, right?
I don't know. I think it's Star Trek, so...
Okay, well, Star Trek and Islam are the same thing, damn it. Wesley Crusher was Muhammad.
Okay. You know, I actually found a really bizarre fan fiction erotica about Wesley Crusher and Beverly Crusher.
That's disgusting.
Oh, it's very disgusting. It was in the holodeck, though, so it's okay. It didn't actually happen. It was just...
It may even be worse than erotic fan fiction of Will Wheaton being Felicia Day's Orbiter.
Oh, there's some pretty interesting Star Trek fan fiction out there.
Yeah, I don't want to read it. I like some of the Star. I like some Star Trek. Don't really like fan fiction myself, though.
Oh yeah, no, I'm. I'd much rather write my own story, but I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah, but okay. So let me ask you this question. What is the difference between a person that you know, a friend, a colleague, maybe a person you've read about a lot in history, George Washington? What is the difference between that and a fictional character to you?
To me, I guess my understanding. Because I will take a friend, for instance, and kind of write something loosely based on them, perhaps, and just get... build an idea around that, but then I take it and sort of turn on its head in a way that I think will connect with the reader more, or connect with myself, or whatever I'm trying to say.
Okay, so let me ask another question, and maybe I'll answer this one too, but let me just ask this other question that is probably more pertinent to writers who are actually sitting down with the problem of how do I create my protagonist, rather than the sort of philosophical, you know, what is a character that you and I have been pursuing right now. So let me say, or let me ask, how many values do you think that the writer needs to inject into a protagonist and antagonist? And, you know, how related to the world of the 21st century do those values need to be? Do you think it's possible for a writer to inject purely medieval values into a character? Do you think it's possible to inject purely 23rd century values into a character, whatever those may be, whatever the writer envisions them to be? Do you think that is something you can do and still have a successful novel?
Oh, yeah. I definitely think so. I mean, you may have a unique challenge in trying to get the reader to maybe understand the values that are vastly different. But, you know, I think at some level, even, a reader will understand, you know, if you're writing a novel about the Renaissance, It's probably not a good example. I guess.
That's just Asian. A novel I have no writing.
Yeah. But no, I mean, if you're writing a novel about the Renaissance, people will understand that the values and the things that they believed at the time are going to be different, even if they don't.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I kind of work with on a daily basis whenever I sit down to write my novel, or at least the pre-writing, which is what I'm doing right now. I hope to start writing in maybe a couple of weeks. But, you know, I look at values like, you know, there was this one book that I read, and it was talking about honor, sort of this Mediterranean honor. And there was this notion that men had the responsibility to defend the chastity and purity of the women of their houses, and if they didn't, that reflected very negatively on the men. And that's something that I wonder if a 21st century reader, a 21st century man or woman, would actually relate to. You know, if a woman grows up with a brother or a father who doesn't, or who kind of gives her free rein to date and sleep around as she wishes, because, you know, that's modern femininity, is she really going to be able to relate to this novel? Is that something, or is that something she's going to look at and say, oh, well, this is, you know, archaic and patriarchal and sexist, and I'm not going to read this novel? You know, that's something I'm kind of thinking about.
I think on some level, a reader who picks up a historical fiction and finds a character with very current values, I don't think it would come across very genuine. I don't know if the reader would probably, you know, be able to specifically put their finger on what is not quite right. But I feel like if you're trying to project 21st century values on someone in Renaissance Italy, I just feel like it won't come across authentic to a certain degree.
That's very true, I think. But my question is something that I think a lot of writers will have to deal with, whether they're writing futuristic novels or historical novels or whatever, and that is, how do you relate values from another period to your own time without turning off the readership, right? I'll give you an example. There is there's a character that I'm dealing with named something Sforza, Lorenzo Sforza. He's kind of the head of the city of Milan, but at this point in time they call him Il Moro, which means the Moor. And what I've read in my research is people believe that he was, you know, very dark skinned or possibly Moorish. But here's the thing: I put that on social media a couple of days ago, and some Italians were like, "No, Il Moro just means he has dark hair. Everybody knows that. Even today, Il Moro just means you have dark hair. It doesn't mean you have dark skin." And, you know, like, we have pictures of Sforza. Like, we know what he looked like. He was not a Moor. And so that is something that I'm kind of dealing with as I go through research, is, you know, does the 21st century American or Western European reader need to be fed something like multiculturalism so that they don't feel like they're reading, you know, something that is ahistorical? You know, do they need to understand, or do they need to believe that Europe was always multicultural, even though it really wasn't? You know, that's something that I'm kind of dealing with.
I would hope not. I mean, I would hope that you could write it authentic and just, I mean, if that offends somebody, that sucks.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like my Japanese novel. I mean, you know, there's one white guy in the Japanese novel, and he's there for about 30 seconds, and it's because he's a Dutch trader on the island of Dejima, which is off the southern coast of Japan. It's like a sort of a man-made island where the Dutch could trade with the Japanese without coming aboard, without coming on shore of Japan. And that is something that I'm kind of looking at right now in my Italian novel as well, is, you know, how do I deal with, you know, things that are not necessarily the way that a 21st century person might be comfortable with. Because we see in movies, we see a multicultural cast, we see, you know, women doing martial arts and being strong female role models or whatever the hell that means. That's probably its own podcast. We could talk about that for its own podcast. But, you know, that's something that I think about is as a writer is, you know, do I need to write the values of my time more than the values of the time I'm writing about?
No, I think that's kind of the weird dilemma that we're dealing with today that we need to get away from. Personally, you know, if someone tells me that, or how I should write or how I have to write, I'm one to just say, you know, fuck you. I'm going to write the hell I want to. That's just kind of the way I work. So, yeah. No, I think that that's something that is that we. I mean, if you read and understand history, you know, values change over time. It's just I don't know. It's mind boggling to me. Stuff like that. That for some reason.
Yeah, it's something
somebody reading
I,
a novel.
I deal with.
I think
any writer is really dealing with it is, and you know, whenever I was working on my master's thesis, I coined a term called epimetheanism, which is judging the past by the standards of the present. And that was something that I noticed a lot of historical critics doing. They would look at, you know, medieval Europe or something like that and say, oh, well, you know, these people are bigots and homophobes and misogynists and all this other stuff. But they're really not. I mean, it was just medieval Europe. And so I use that term, epimetheanism, to mean judging the past by the standards of the present. And in 400 years, how are people going to look at us? I mean, they're going to think we were insane for having 38 genders or for thinking that there were 38 genders that should be recognized legally. You know, that's something that's entirely different. But I think as a guy who writes historical fiction, what I want to do is I want to create a sense of the time. I want to create a sense of the time period for my readers. I want them to be able to immerse themselves in, you know, early modern Japan or, you know, early modern Italy, as this is. And I want them to be able to say, okay, I can escape from this 21st century hell project for a few hours a day and read this novel. You know, that to me is what I want to do. And that to me is all about, that ultimately comes back to creating characters. And those characters have to be authentic to that time period, right? They have to hold the values of the time period. Whether those values would be politically correct today or not is an entirely different thing. But I want to create characters that would be honest and consistent with 1490.
You know, and I think that actually goes back to the thing that you like to bring up about writing to, you know, one or two people. Yeah, obviously there are going to be people who read a novel about Renaissance Italy and they don't get the time period, they don't understand it, whatever, and that's okay. But, you know, writing to somebody who wants to understand that time period, they're going to get it. And I think that's okay.
Yeah. And that always goes back again to the thing that I always say, that a novel for everyone is a novel for no one. And if I were to try to write this novel out, to be, you know, some big, you know, multi-million dollar success that gets optioned by Sony or whatever and turned into some big movie, you know, directed by Michael Bay, I would feel very bad about the quality of the novel I produced, because a novel for everyone is a novel for no one, and I really believe that. So what I'm trying to do with this novel and with the characters in this novel is I'm trying to create characters and a plot and a story that will resonate with traditionalists, that will resonate with people who, like myself, feel like maybe we were born into the wrong century. You know, because I can't be the only one. I think there's probably a lot of people who look around 21st century America and think, this is not how man is supposed to exist. Like, there's a writer named Jack Donovan who wrote a book called The Way of Men, which has this piece in it that says, and I'll never forget reading this, it says something to the effect of, you know, we used to be heroic man, but we've traded that in for economic man, where we are creatures shuffling across the globe looking for new ways to screw each other out of money. And that, to me, is just not what man is supposed to be. I think we are much more than that. I think we are creators. I think we're people who hold values that cause creation. And I think, you know, that in writing this novel about Italy, I am exploring heroism in a way that we really don't in modern novels. Because can you really think of a hero in a modern novel or a modern movie that isn't a comic book character, A, or B, that isn't, you know, sort of a flawed character in the same way that, you know, the baby boomers took things like Batman and turned him into a flawed character, sort of the Frank Miller Batman, you know? Mm-hmm. Is it possible for there to be heroic characters still? And that's something that I'm dealing with.
Yeah, no, it's kind of a unique challenge that I think we face today, trying to, I think the answer really is, you know, quit trying to please everybody, quit trying to please somebody who might criticize your book or your characters, and just write them as authentically as you can, as you see them. And I think that's really the answer. Whatever that may look like for you as a writer, you know, kind of use some of the things we maybe brought up today, or figure out your own ways of understanding people over time periods or whatnot, and try to portray them as authentically as you can.
Yeah, so I've kind of hogged the debate, or at least the discussion here, with my opinions on what characters are and what I'm doing in my novel to create characters. So let me ask you, how would you define character, and what to you is the difference between a fictional character and a historical character, like Abraham Lincoln?
Yeah, I don't really know. I kind of have... I kind of tend to reject philosophical questions.
Thanks. You know that. Okay, let's end the podcast there. Let's make some racist jokes. Fucking
no,
make
no,
some racist
I,
jokes and just end.
I tend to kind of sort of draw, like, my conclusions about them are less conscious, and I just sort of, I don't know, feel it. I guess. I don't know.
So for you, the creation of a character is a feeling, right? Not something that you sit down and do on a piece of paper and say, these are the values this character will hold. These are the
yes
things this character
no.
wants. So for you, it's
for
a
me,
gut
it's,
instinct?
For me, it starts with a gut instinct. It starts with, I guess, maybe imagining what their mind is like, or what interaction with them might be. It probably starts there, I think, and then it kind of morphs into a more intellectual way of looking at it, I guess, where you kind of break down the values. But I definitely think for me it starts at a more I don't know if cliche is the right word, but at a more more of a feeling place, I guess you could say.
So for me, maybe between the two of us, we have kind of delineated the two ways of creating a character. You know, the very intellectual way of creating a character that says, this is the name that will be the shorthand for these values, and these are the values that I want to embolden, or at least portray, and these are the values that I want to come in contact in conflict with. And your sort of intuitive go off of the gut instinct for creating a character. So let me ask you this. If you're going to use your gut instinct to create a character, do you worry that you won't have sufficient conflict? Because maybe if you're creating character, like a protagonist and an antagonist, or the protagonist side and the antagonist side, do you worry that you won't have enough conflict because they might be too similar?
I think earlier on, I definitely was worried about that, and maybe I did that. When I was writing, but now I really don't worry about that. I try to imagine, for instance, experiences I have with other people who are very, very different. And I'm like, okay, I want to embody this person into a character, that kind of thing. And I guess with historical characters, I guess to kind of try to answer your question a little bit, I guess it takes a little bit more of an imagination, a little bit more research to really understand. I guess historical characters, I guess you really do have to take a more intellectual approach, which is perhaps why you lean on that approach, is simply because with writing someone historical, it's not somebody that we can interact with. Of course, we're not going to go interact with Abraham Lincoln. We have to try to research and break down what he thought or how he reacted to things in a more intellectual way.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a question that I ran across as a historian, which is, you know, the only way I can know a historical character is by reading about that character. There's no way I can actually go back and meet Abraham Lincoln or Alfred Thiermann or anything like that. All I can do is read about them. Or Robert E. Lee or really whatever. You know, so to me, they are very much the same thing as a fictional character, right? Except for the fact that we as a society collectively agree that Abraham Lincoln existed as a person. Whereas we look at the Vampire Lestat and say, well, no, he didn't exist as a person. And it's the same thing with Dracula. You know, Dracula didn't exist as a person, but Vlad Tepes did. And so maybe, and I this is a thought I've had since early college, like when I took my first archaeology class, I would say, maybe, you know, there's an archaeologist that comes along in 800 years and digs up a copy of Dracula and says, oh, okay, so this Dracula character really existed. You know, what then is the difference between Dracula, the character in Bram Stoker's novel, and Vlad Tepes? Maybe they don't know the difference. But there's a responsibility on the writer to sit down and say, okay, this is one type of character, this is another type. And you know, that's something I deal with, which is when doing writing for historical novels, which is, do I have an obligation to a historical figure to portray them the way they wanted to be portrayed in life? You know, that's a whole other question about character, really.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, that's something when reading or watching historical fiction is just really fascinating to me. Just how, just that challenge of maybe wanting to try to portray them in an accurate way, but then realizing it's kind of a fool's errand in a lot of ways.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, like, did you ever see that movie Glory? It's from, like, 1992 or something?
No.
Okay, well, it's a movie about the Civil War and the first all-black, infantry unit in the American Army or something, the Massachusetts 54th Regiment. And, you know, there's this, I guess you could say, when I was watching it, I was wondering, you know, how accurate are people portraying this Robert Gould Shaw, who was the commander of it? You know, and he's a white guy. He's a privileged white guy from Boston, I think. And I'm just thinking, you know, is that really who he is? Or, you know, what if you were to portray Abraham Lincoln on screen? Or, you know, and the recent Loeza movie called Lincoln, which had Daniel Day-Lewis in it. I mean, is there an obligation by the creators, by the writers, by the directors to create a kind of historically accurate Lincoln, or do we have an obligation to our audience to create a character that can carry the story, that can be more interesting than the actual historical character? That's, you know, that's an interesting question that I deal with sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of times with historical fiction, you almost do have to kind of... extend the truth and realize, you know, I am writing fiction, even if, you know, these people did exist. Like, you know, for instance, the movie, or the series, actually, Rome, which is an awesome series on HBO. There wasn't a whole lot of...
I really liked that. It was good.
Yeah, it was an awesome series. There wasn't a whole lot of information about the two main characters. I can't remember the names at this point, Polo and something else.
Those two guys that appeared very briefly in one of Caesar's books, right?
Yeah. I think that's really the only information they had on him. And so they really do have a creative license to kind of come up with these stories. But I don't know. I guess in some ways it's probably a little off topic here, but it's almost a philosophical question of you realize that the people are going to take this and take it as truth because it's a historical fiction. And so the question there of is it okay to take these characters or these real people and turn them into fictional characters? I don't know.
Well, you know, that's something that I kind of dealt with when I was writing my master's thesis that I realized, you know, and I wrote my master's thesis in history on the history of the Vietnam War. And one of the things that I kept coming across was, or at least kept encountering, was I am writing about real people. You know, I'm not writing fiction. I'm not writing a screenplay. I'm not writing a novel that is supposed to entertain people. I am writing facts or truth about people who actually existed and who still do exist. You know, like whenever I was doing my MA, I talked to people and heard their stories and heard what they had to say. And, you know, they were in some ways real people over the phone. But whenever I wrote them down in my book, you know, they were a name that was associated with values, and those values led to actions. And that's kind of what informs my philosophical view of what a character is, that a character is a shorthand for a collection of values. And, you know, that is to me everything that a character really is and should be in a novel and also in history. Because the best understanding you can ever get of a real living historical figure is to say, these are the values that person lived, and these are what these are the actions that those values led them to. And I think that that's something that you as an author of, or anyone as an author of history, of science fiction and fantasy, of a space opera that's taking place 500 years in the future, you should think of yourself as having an obligation to a living person who inhabits those values, really. But yeah, that's my view on character, and we're up to an hour again. We've done this three times now. An hour-long podcast.
I don't know.
But that's not a bad thing. I think we've got a lot of quality here, I think. You know, some things for our listeners to mull over and to think about, right?
Yeah, and, you know, the great thing is, I've been doing this, actually, so I started watching podcasts. You can pause them and start them right where you left off on iTunes.
Oh, well, that's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty great, so... I think you're right. I think it really comes down to values. Every character in a book I think about, it's all a collection of values, and you know, the rest is just detail.
Yeah, I mean, a character is fate, and your character is the sum of your values. It's what you believe about the world. It's what you believe about yourself. It's what you believe is worth standing up for. It's what you believe is noble. And you know, those are my final thoughts on a character, at least for now. Maybe in the future we'll record something else, because I feel like we could talk a lot about character. But, you know, this is a very impromptu podcast that I forced Steven into because I was drinking and he was, you know, doing something else, I guess. And we've wanted to record this for a while now. So maybe these thoughts and thoughts and ponderances on values and character and what a character is, maybe that'll get you started on your way to writing your great novel. So, you know, I don't really have much else to say about this right now, do you?
No, I really don't.
Okay,
we could do, like, so many podcasts, like, breaking down this topic. or like certain things within this topic. So,
yeah, because really when you get down to it, character is the only thing that a novel is. And if, and it's not even a novel, it's short stories. It's flash fiction, you know, because character is value, and what you're writing about, whether you understand it or not, whether you acknowledge it or not, whether you're in a particular genre or not, you are writing about the values that matter to those characters, which are the values that matter to the writer. They're the values that you believe you should endorse. They're the values that you believe you should condemn. And that is something that I think every writer deals with, and that's something that makes every novel unique. And in fact, that's something that makes every novel kind of speak to its own nation and its own people, right? Because you're talking about the values of the people, whether it's the Russian people, the British people, the American people, at a certain point in time. Those are the really great novels, the novels that stick out. You know, they are the Harriet Beecher Stowes, they are the Dostoevskys, they are the Jane Austens, they are the Stendhals, if you're into French literature. You know, they are the novels that speak to a people in a place in a time. And really, that's what you as a novelist and as a writer ought to do. You ought to try to create a novel that embodies values of your time, or perhaps values of the time that you're writing about, right? So that's all I really have to say. Stephen, do you want to say anything else?
No, not really.
Okay, so then...
Podcast,
you know, that,
at uprisingofyou.com.
Yeah, that was a podcast. If you like this podcast, share a friend, share it, tell a friend, leave a rating if it's on iTunes. You know, don't report us for being horrible racist dicks, or at least don't report me for that. I said nothing in this podcast that was horrible, I don't think. So, you know, just...
Not yet.
But, hey, podcast ain't over yet. Podcast's not over yet. But, you know, leave a rating, share it with a friend, tell a friend about this podcast, tell a friend about uprisingreview.com, free speech magazine that publishes short stories. If you have a short story you want us to publish or that you think is good enough for us, submissions at uprising.com. If you have questions, comments, concerns about our podcast, that you can contact us at podcast@uprisingview.com. You know, we're always looking for suggestions for